Friday, getting you ready for week three, telling you who to add, who to start next week, and all about Vince Velasquez, Jaime Garcia, Jeremy Hazelbaker, and all the other standouts from Thursday. What's going on? Do your taxes, everybody. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White and Heath Cummings. Good morning. Where's Al?
What happened? Al is off today.
Oh.
Off today. I don't know much beyond that.
It's
voluntary day off. I do know that.
Okay, good. Well, Heath, welcome to the Friday show.
Hey, I'm just happy to get to do another podcast this week with Scott.
Hey, here's the thing. Al's off today. Heath is not. Which basically means Al was rude enough to take Heath's birthday off. He didn't let Heath have it. He said, I'm going to do it. See you guys later. I'm going to have fun while Heath is working on his birthday.
Wait, today's Heath's birthday?
Today's Heath's birthday.
Whoa! Breaking news.
Yeah, get it right out of the way up front. I don't want him to have to like subtly sneak it in like I had to do on my birthday.
Yeah, I wouldn't have brought it up.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Heath.
Hey, thank you. It's always nice sharing a birthday with Tax Day.
Are we at the big 4-0 yet or what?
No, we got a few years
until
that comes our way. I'm 37
today. Oh, very good.
Older than Adrian Beltre. Right?
I think he's already 37, isn't he?
Adrian
Beltre and I are like 5 days apart in age, if I remember right.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. Cool. Well, I wonder if he thinks you're old.
I would like to think that for my particular profession, I'm just entering my prime.
Okay. Maybe.
I think that's a pretty long prime in this profession. It's not like your skills decline with age.
But yes, Adrian Beltre turned 37 8 days ago.
We do have a busy, busy show and a lot to get to. So let's start out. Oh, by the way, email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Let's start out with the big news presented by AutoCorrect. My phone really struggled with this Colorado Rockies news. This is what my phone said. Charlie Blackmon is on the DL with turd toe.
Okay.
Turd toe, yeah, so that's no good. Also, Nick Hundred, their catcher, was evaluated for a concussion, so they called up their other catching prospect, Dustin Garnish.
Now, I have a question.
Yeah.
Who are you texting so much about turds?
I don't know, but...
Okay, because that's why your phone would correct turf to turd. Because you
would think so. Maybe I just typed turd accidentally and it didn't correct it to turd.
I thought maybe you called people turds in texts.
I don't think so. That's not really my go-to insult. But Charlie Blackmon is on the DL with turf toe. Nick Huntley was evaluated for a concussion, and Colorado called up catcher Dustin Garneau. And there are a lot of things to talk about here, like Gerardo Parra staying in the lineup now. But anyway, break it down, guys. This is pretty significant stuff before we get to Velasquez and Garcia.
Well, as somebody who drafted Gerardo Parra more than any other player, that's the angle that immediately came to mind for me. Okay, well, maybe now that Blackmon leaves this hole in center field, maybe Gerardo Parra will get to play against lefties, and maybe he'll perform well enough against lefties that this whole platoon thing will go out the window. But I don't think it's guaranteed that suddenly he's going to play against lefties, because they were also trying to work Brandon Barnes into the lineup as well as Ryan Rayburn. And Barnes could play center.
Yeah, my expectation would be that Rayburn and Barnes are going to play most of the time against lefties. Parra and Paulson are going to play most of the time against righties.
Yeah.
I think this means more playing time for Ben Paulson, because for some reason Mark Reynolds needs to play almost every day.
Well, maybe Paulson can prove Reynolds doesn't. With this 2 week stretch at least.
What do we know about backup? I mean, Nick Hundley was the other news. What do we know about backup catcher Tony Wolters?
Not much.
He stole two bases yesterday. That's weird.
That is weird.
I think he stole both of them off of Posey.
Hmm.
I know at least one of them.
Yeah. He had a 19 steal season back in 2011. I'm not thinking he's going to revolutionize the catcher position here.
Okay.
All right, let me ask some questions.
He was an infielder back then.
Are Ben Paulson or Dustin Garneau worth adding in rotisserie leagues? Paulson and Garneau.
Paulson, yes.
Yeah.
I just dropped him a couple days ago. Finally giving up on the idea of him getting consistent playing time because of Mark Reynolds. And I noticed that league where I dropped him, he was picked up this morning. And I thought, like to have that one back.
What we can hope is that over the next 2 weeks, Ben Paulson hits like we hoped he would in the preseason, playing almost every day. And at the same time, Mark Reynolds is Mark Reynolds, and the Rockies realize that Mark Reynolds is Mark Reynolds.
And Charlie Blackmon hopefully comes back pretty soon. So we don't know.
I just want to add that I'm not especially excited about Paulson the player, but there's enough there to maybe take advantage of Coors Field in a big way, which we saw to a limited degree last year.
And Garneau, you just think is a backup catcher, and
yeah,
no, okay. Then let's go to the two great starts from yesterday. Wow, what a day! Vince Velasquez, 27 swinging strikes, complete game shutout, 3 hits, no walks, 16 strikeouts against the San Diego Padres. His first start, Velasquez threw 6 scoreless innings with 3 hits, 3 walks, and 9 strikeouts at the Mets. So far, so good. Let's start with him. What are your thoughts on Double V, Vince Velasquez?
Well, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't say this came against the Padres, who have been terrible offensively, and you know, just got dominated by Jared Eichhoff the day before, which I thought was exciting, although this start kind of makes it look worse. But at the same time, Vince Velasquez, as he's known now, became the 8th pitcher in history, I believe it was, to have 16 strikeouts and no walks and a shutout. And the other 7 were all stud pitchers. I mean, I guess Kerry Wood didn't have the longevity,
right,
but he was a stud pitcher in his day.
Yeah, Kerry Wood had 20 strikeouts. Velasquez is being compared to Kerry Wood a little bit. 20 strikeouts in 1998. He finished that year with a 3.40 ERA, which was 19th best in baseball at that point. Look, Padres are terrible. They're the first team in baseball history to get shut out in 5 of their first 10 games. Would you try to sell high on Vince Velasquez?
Possibly. I was higher on him than I think we all were, actually. I think was higher on Velasquez than what the general perception was. But there's a pretty good chance after these two starts, the general perception has soared right past us. Because I don't think the Kerry Wood comparison's fair.
In what way?
I don't think he has a chance this year to be as good as Kerry Wood was in his peak.
Prime. Okay.
Yeah.
No, but okay, so maybe I guess if people are treating him like a top 20 pitcher, and you know, you could get like Chris Archer.
That's exactly who I was going to say.
Like a combo sell high, buy low. I could get behind that.
Well,
but
okay,
just,
look, that seems a little obvious. What if you could get like a Michael Wacha for him?
No, it's interesting that you bring up Wacha, because that is where I moved Velasquez, directly behind Wacha.
You
so
moved
I guess
him
the
that
answer,
far
yes.
up?
Yes, he's my now my 28th starting
28?
Pitcher.
You made Vince Velasquez a top 30 starting pitcher?
It wasn't just this start, which, by the way, 16 strikeouts. How often does that happen, period?
Yeah, Michael
he
Pineda
had 9
struck
strikeouts
out 16.
In his first start. He hasn't allowed a run in either.
Okay, the Mets are the worst lineup in baseball right now, I think.
Pretty sure the Padres are.
Okay, I think the Mets are... The Mets are number 2. They've scored the second fewest runs in baseball. The Twins... Because
right.
The Padres played in Coors Field for 3 games.
I get the Padres, but look at the actual names in the Mets lineup.
I know, but
he
got them at the right time. I think it's a little hasty to move Vince Velasquez into your top 30.
Well, I disagree. Clearly, I feel more confident in him than Justin Verlander, Garrett Richards. I think he has more upside than Jordan Zimmermann, certainly. These are the names I moved him ahead of, and I would legitimately take him over all of them.
I'm going to move him up. I haven't moved him up yet. I was the highest on him before that start, I think. I'm not going to be the highest on him anymore.
Where are you going to move Velasquez to?
I think he belongs in the Raisel Iglesias, Yordano Ventura, Carlos Rodon group, right around 35.
Well, that's not that far behind.
No, it's not that far, but...
I mean, would you take... Let me ask you, Adam, because I don't think you've been as high on Taijuan Walker as I have. Would you take Velasquez over Walker?
Probably not.
See, I've got Walker. I've got Walker above that group that I just said.
I love Walker, but what has he done that's even remotely close to what Velasquez has done?
Well, look, Michael Pineda struck out 16 Orioles last year. He had a 5.04 ERA the rest of the way. And that was in May when he struck out 16 Orioles. So it's just, you know,
wasn't he worth ranking as a top 30 pitcher then?
And we were wrong.
Okay, but that doesn't mean we're going to be wrong every time.
Velasquez still has some control issues, I think. He did walk 3 in his first start.
Walked 0 in this start.
He faced the Padres without Matt Kemp, who's the only semblance of a good hitter that they have.
Fine.
Look, I like Velasquez. I'm very happy. I have him in two leagues. You know, it just seems a little hasty. Isn't he on an innings limit as well?
Well, I don't think, it would just stand to reason that they wouldn't let him pitch like 200 innings, because I don't think he even had 100 last year.
Also, I'm not down on Taijuan Walker. The argument was about Walker last year, not Walker this year.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, I know that's an important misconception that I need to clear up, because I don't want to be the guy who hates Taijuan Walker. We argued about last year's production. All right. Yeah. So he's clearly in the top 40 now, Vince Velasquez. How about Jaime Garcia? Nine innings shutout, obviously. Complete game shutout. One hit, one walk, 13 strikeouts against Milwaukee. And he did not have a good first start. 4 runs in 6 innings at the Braves. But he did have a good 2015. How do you guys feel about Jaime Garcia?
I moved him up a little bit. And I obviously think, you know, you can't let him go unowned after this start. But, you know, in relation to yesterday's two big emergence off the waiver wire, Jared Eichhoff and Adam Conley, I have them clustered. They're just outside of my top 60, which means majority of mixed leagues, yeah, they need to be owned. I guess in maybe the shallowest formats, it might be tough to squeeze them in, but definitely excited about the potential. I don't see Garcia being a big strikeout source just because he never has before,
right?
But you know, he's never been healthy for very long before either.
This is a good point to test my theory that I came up with a couple days ago, Adam, and see if you think it's wrong. Maybe I brought it up yesterday, but the Brewers are awful too. And I feel like there are just like 5, 6, maybe 7 teams, and we don't normally have this many teams that are this bad. Like that Brewers offense in Miller Park, sure, that's fine. But you get them on the road, and they're just they're terrible.
Especially with the way Braun is hitting right now, which is to say not at all.
So, I mean, the Braves are not any good. The Twins' offense is awful. The Padres, the Brewers.
Reds aren't so hot.
The Reds aren't very good. And really, I mean, the Phillies are off to a nice start.
No, they're not good. I mean, they have a good 1-2-3 in the rotation, it appears. But
I just can't remember a time when we had 6 or 7 teams that were this bad.
Well, I don't know that it's going to stay that way. I mean, I feel like the Twins could start hitting, and I actually don't think the Reds lineup is that bad. If you think Cozart and Suarez are solid players, then you got
the Reds lineup is just really thin.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, you get past 5 and you're pretty much done.
But right now, Joey Votto doesn't have an extra base hit. So it's a great time to face the Reds. These guys are taking advantage of good matchups like Chris Sale will tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays.
That's not as good a matchup.
That's pretty good.
It is for right-handed pitchers. For lefties, they've got a lot of lefty mashers in that lineup.
Okay.
All right. But, you know, get out of daily fantasy mode for a second here, where you're just choosing one pitcher from the entire slate. You would expect Chris Sale to be good against any lineup.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know why I brought that up. I was just spitballing. All right. So I think I might have to make some Velasquez trade offers to Scott White and Heath.
Offer away. To me.
Well, okay.
Yeah, especially.
Well, listen. What did we learn from Raisel Iglesias last night? Because, you know, 24 hours ago, if I had said Vince Velasquez or Raisel Iglesias, would have been a no-brainer. But
no, I would have taken Vince Velasquez then, too. I
had
Velasquez ahead of Iglesias, yeah.
Oh, really? So you're just much lower on Iglesias than I am.
I don't know that that's true. How high do you have Iglesias?
35.
Okay, maybe. I have him 48, so.
And I'm not that... Like, last night was not a good start for Raisel Iglesias, but there are going to be a lot of pitchers that we think more of than Raisel Iglesias that have much worse starts against that lineup.
Yeah, but what about Rich Hill? I mean, I know Heath doesn't like Rich Hill, but Scott, you like Rich Hill. He's had two very different starts.
Rich Hill is not in the Velasquez-Iglesias equation.
But he struck out. He's had double-digit strikeouts in his last. So you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, it's I think it's going to be a love-hate relationship with Rich Hill, because I think it's just, does he have the feel for the curveball that night? And if he does, could be a good strikeout total. If he doesn't, he's going to get rocked. And so I think, you know, that sort of pitcher still, for those good starts, needs to be owned in the majority of leagues, but it's not a guy you're going to trust every time.
I
don't think he'll ever get to that point.
Richel, I think, faces the Royals this weekend, and I'm really interested to see how that start goes against a team that doesn't strike out but also doesn't walk.
I think it's tonight.
Is it tonight?
Yeah, it's Volquez Hill, pretty sure. All right, so let's get to the rest of baseball. Jeremy Hazelbaker, a lot of questions about him. I think he's 50% owned, and he's batting .481. He homered again, batted second for the Cardinals. Heath, what do you think about Hazelbaker right now? Congratulations on having him in NL only.
Yeah, he's my only good player on that team. I think Chris Towers said it best yesterday when he said, "I just can't make any comments on Jeremy Hazelbaker because I don't think he's good." But the Cardinals turn guys that I don't think are good into good baseball players. So
he did have power and speed in the minors. He just struck out a ton.
Right. Listen, what's the threat to his playing time? Fam?
Well, not just Fam. I mean, Moss, if he gets hot, or Adams, if not that I expect Adams to get hot. But
the reason I say that is he doesn't have to keep hitting like he's hitting. But if he could even come anywhere close to what he's been doing, I don't think any of those guys are going to take his job just because of their name or just because of their skill set. He's going to have to get cold to lose his job now.
Would you drop any of the following players for Jeremy Hazelbaker? Chris Davis with a K.
No. I don't think so, no.
Oh, okay. Byron Buxton.
I could see doing that.
Do I need to start him?
No.
Yeah.
That's what matters to me.
Okay.
If I don't need to start him, I'd probably hold on to Buxton, but if I need to start him, definitely.
Yeah.
Curtis Granderson.
No way. Not a chance.
Nope.
How about Danny Valencia?
I won it, but
sure.
Okay. Ross Stripling, 56% owned. Is he more interesting to you now than he was last week? 7 1/3. That was last week. Sorry. Yesterday, 6 innings, 2 runs on 5 hits with 5 strikeouts against Arizona. Previous start, 7 1/3, no hits and 1 run at San Francisco.
A little. I mean, the second time where it's a solid start. I mean, that obviously counts for more than the first time. And I think the fact that walks weren't as much of an issue is also encouraging.
And he did it against a major league lineup.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks, as opposed to
the San Francisco Giants. The first time
it was the Giants. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have discounted that.
So, yeah, is he really on the level as any of the other pitchers we've mentioned so far? For me, he's not. I take Rich Hill over him, and that's probably the lowest pitcher we've mentioned. But he's. You know, you get into leagues of any real size, I think he's on the radar now.
Adam, I'm more interested in if you are more interested in Ross Stripling.
No, you cannot include him in your lousy trade offers.
Okay.
I made a trade yesterday, guys.
Oh, you did? This is exciting.
I traded Dexter Fowler for Ryan Braun in a categories league.
Are you kidding me?
It was proposed to me, my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
Which novice, this which is novice league trade. Was this?
I mean, this guy was, this is a league I, different league. The only league I don't play in with you guys.
Was this the old editorial league?
No, just, no. It's, I actually
I know
don't
that
play
means
this,
nothing to anybody.
I don't play this league on CBS.
Okay.
So, yeah, he was dying to trade Ryan Braun. I made him an offer. And he turned it down, and then he countered with Fowler for Braun.
So you made an offer worse than that.
Actually, I made a pretty similar offer. I made him Fowler and Matt Moore for Braun and Shelby Miller. And I thought maybe he would think Moore was an upgrade over Miller.
I do.
Yeah, maybe he is.
I think he took a worse trade. Not
I'd rather have Miller,
good.
but either way.
Wow.
And then he just came back. Actually, no. You know what? I don't even... I think I was giving him an upgrade because the downgraded outfield was so big from Braun to Fowler, but he hates Braun, so okay, I'll take
him. Why'd you draft Braun if you hate him?
Braun's off to a slow start. I'm not surprised that Braun is off to a slow start. He had an abbreviated spring training, and back surgery. You know, like
right.
be patient with these guys. Look at Brett Gardner. Yeah.
I'm not surprised that any hitter's off to a slow start, to be perfectly honest. It's still less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it's particularly the ones that got a late start right. to spring training. I'm not
sure.
surprised when they get off to a slow start. Would you guys drop Julio Teheran at this point?
You know, I feel like I keep jumping in first, Heath. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I answered first on Hazel Baker.
Yeah. In a shallow enough league, I don't think it's crazy. I think if it's a league where you still have, for instance, Jaime Garcia available, and he's owned at about 80% of leagues now, less than 100. I think you could consider dropping Teheran because there really hasn't been much good this year after a year of not much good last year. I mean, he was okay at the end and that gave us some hope. But now this year, struggling with control, velocity's down a mile and a half from last year, which I'm not concerned about for most pitchers, but that was after kind of a steady decline in velocity for Teheran already. So it's, you know, he's averaging about 90 on his fastball. That makes me nervous.
I'm dropping him below Jaime Garcia. I'm dropping him below Ian Kennedy.
Yeah.
I'm dropping him below Jose Quintana.
I think that's fair. I mean, I have Quintana way ahead of those others too right. to begin with, but yeah.
I've got him right in the Jeff Samardzija range right now.
Okay. Now that seems reasonable.
Okay.
Similar histories, but a lot of bad recently.
And that's Julio Teheran. All right. Were there any other big standouts from Thursday's action that I missed? Okay, then.
Heath just named one, Ian Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, Kennedy. Yeah, it was a good start for Kennedy at the Astros.
I will say a couple things about Ian Kennedy, because you had listed in the notes his ERAs over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's just been a huge... I mean, he's striking batters out, and he's pitching well, but he's using the defense. He's using the outfield defense specifically. Yesterday in Houston... And this might not sound good for Kennedy. The Astros, I think, may have had 2 or 3 flyouts that were longer than Mike Moustakas' home run. and Moustakas' home run went in the first row in right field. Lorenzo Cain made 2 or 3 catches on the warning track in center field right in front of Tal's Hill.
So you think he got a little lucky then yesterday?
I think he's going to give up some home runs this year.
Oh, he always gives up
but
home
I think
runs,
his but... ERA is going to be considerably better simply because he's been pitching in front of the worst outfield defense in baseball, and now he's pitching in front of one of the top three.
And not only that, but he's pitching in a huge park. It wasn't yesterday, Houston, but in Kansas City.
Yeah, they just didn't pull any balls yesterday.
His biggest issues have been control and home runs. Struck out 9.3 per 9 each of the last 2 years. I mean, just take that number and you're like, oh, this guy has stud potential. So if he can cut down on the home runs, even if he does walk some hitters, I think he's going to be a nice option.
And I think pitching in front of a bad defense and giving up a lot of home runs is going to lead to more walks. You're going to nibble more if you don't trust your defense to make plays. And
it's going to lead to fewer walks. I think you said more.
No, I think it'll lead to more walks playing in front of I think now he'll walk fewer because he has a defense he can trust.
I
don't know so much the last couple of years if he couldn't throw strikes so much as he was just trying to strike everybody out because he wasn't sure how else to get an out.
So just to kind of put this into context, Jaime Garcia, Jared Eichhoff, Adam Conley, Ian Kennedy. And I might move Ian Kennedy up ahead of Conley and Eichhoff again with the second start. So they're kind of 4 right there just outside my top 60, which means, you know, 12-team league. Just if everybody has 5 starting pitchers, you're going 60 deep. So these guys probably all need to be owned.
Okay, cool. I think it's worth mentioning Chris Archer. He's off to a rough start this year. And last 6 starts of 2015, Archer had a 5.81 ERA. And 20 walks in 31 innings. He faced some tough teams. Yankees, Red Sox, Blue Jays. Are there any concerns at all for you on Chris Archer?
I'm really struggling with that one. Because it doesn't surprise me that he's struggling with command a little bit. Of all the pitchers that were in Scott's ace tier, he was the most likely to have those issues probably. I've moved him down one spot in my rankings already, but that's only because I moved Thor ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think Archer should still be a very solid number 2 that performs like a number 1 part of the time and a number 4 the rest of the time.
Yeah. I'm not really panicking here either. because the stuff in terms of velocity looks exactly the same. The pitch selection, exactly the same. I think it's just a case of him, his command being a little off in the early going here. And this is going to be one of those situations where we look back and say, man, this guy had a really bad April, which seems to happen for three or four really good pitchers every year. And then they just dominate from that point forward. So that's kind of the way I see this playing out for Archer.
It's a good buy low opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay. Injuries, news, and notes. Jacob deGrom still could go on the DL. We'll find out probably today or tomorrow. Byron Buxton left after being hit by a pitch on the hand. He is day-to-day. Max Kepler took his place. Brandon Crawford hurt his hip. Joe Panik also has a hip issue, but he came in yesterday's game as a defensive replacement. So both those guys you consider day-to-day, Crawford and Panik. Meanwhile, Sergio Romo on the DL with a flexor strain in his elbow. Justin Turner day-to-day after being hit by a pitch on the hand on Wednesday. Christian Vasquez, Red Sox catcher, he will be activated today. So this it has not been a good start to the season for Blake Swihart, and I imagine Swihart will get dropped in some one-catcher leagues. Yesterday, Chris Bryant played left field. Tommy La Stella was at third base for the Cubs. Jorge Soler sat, and Javier Baez could be back this weekend. So Baez, guys, is probably somebody that should, you know, let me check his ownership, but I think not a bad speculative ad, right? Javi Baez?
You want to Baez him?
I do.
I wish I didn't say that.
Well,
sorry.
Baez.
I was waiting.
Yeah, like the standard roto lineup with, you know, much deeper in hitters than the standard head-to-head lineup. I think he's a nice bench option for the upside. I know I have him in a couple of those leagues myself.
Baez is 38% owned. Brian McCann returned to the Yankees lineup. Adam Jones returned. Freddie Freeman says he is 100% healthy. He was rested yesterday. He's off to a bad start, but he says it is not health related. And Zach Cozart and Devin Mesoraco remained out, but appear close to returning, particularly Cozart. All right. Let's do some rest of season rankings. I only have two for you. I think they're both fascinating. Mookie Betts or Andrew McCutchen? Who would you rather have rest of season? McCutchen is homerless and steal-less so far.
McCutchen is somebody that I had not even considered starting to panic about. So I'm going to take McCutchen pretty, I wouldn't say comfortably, because I've, since the season has started, really not because of anything he's done, because he got off to a pretty slow start, I've gotten more and more excited about the idea of Mookie Betts and wished that I'd drafted him a little bit more often. But I don't have any reason at all to say that a guy that was a borderline first round pick, I'm now concerned about after a couple of weeks.
Scott, Betts or McCutchen?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I was just, you know, I was just looking at Andrew McCutchen's strikeout to walk ratio because I know he's gotten on base a lot, and you know, it looks as good as it always does.
Mm-hmm. Seven.
But
walks,
this is—I don't know what this means. But Mookie Betts has struck out 11 times and has one walk. That's
wow.
I assume that's just a fluky early season thing, but that's very un-Mookie like.
All right, next one here. Would you rather have Mike Trout or Josh Donaldson?
Trout. Yeah.
Yeah, what's happened that would cause us to not want to have Mike Trout if he was an option?
This has happened.
Okay.
Donaldson deserves to be in the Harper, Trout, Goldschmidt discussion. He was better than all of them last year in Roto, and he was 5 points worse than Harper in points leagues. He's batting .325 so far with 5 home runs. All right, the batting average might come down, but there is no doubting Josh Donaldson. I think we had always talked about a big 3 with the hitters. In my opinion, it's a big 4.
You may be right. I mean, certainly the numbers last year bear that out. Donaldson hadn't really performed it. He'd been really good, but he hadn't performed at quite that level before. But he and Jose Altuve, I feel like, are the two, you know, first or, you know, top 15 picks, let's say, who have really lived up to expectations so far. I guess Nolan Arenado. I guess Manny Machado. I keep thinking of more.
Wait, Harper. Did you mention Harper?
Yeah. With that third home run yesterday, I think he joins that group too. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Altuve has been amazing.
Yeah. Yes. 3 home runs for Altuve now.
Yeah, and the one he hit yesterday was an opposite field shot, and it wasn't a shot, but it didn't even look like he hit the ball that hard, and it carried out of the park to right field. And that, there aren't a ton of hitters that hit balls like that to the opposite field that you think it's not going to, like, it's just a can of corn and all of a sudden it's out of the park.
Yeah, he's an amazing player.
Yes, he is.
And if he gets a good hitter behind him, that'd be even better. But that Springer guy, ugh.
He looks awful.
Right? Was he swinging out of his shoes again yesterday?
Oh, yeah. He, worst thing, like, they had runners on second and third down five in the last inning, and he refused to take a walk to load the bases.
Oh,
he just refused. Struck out on a pitch about 12 inches off the plate.
Oh, yeah. He's struggling right now. Would you buy low on George Springer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Time for our slash line of the day. This is a funny slash line. Who has this slash line? He plays in the American League Central. 333 batting average, 323 on base. That is hard to do at a 600 slugging percentage.
So he's not walking.
And he must have gotten thrown out at second or something trying to stretch a single into a double. Like, how do you have an on base?
I never really understood how that happened, how an on base percentage could be lower than the batting average.
That's the only explanation I could come up with.
Okay.
Right? Is there anything else?
I don't know. I didn't. I assume that would still count as getting on base because it's not like you lose. Well, or maybe you do. I don't think you lose on base percentage points for getting thrown out stealing, let's say. You know?
I'm not proud of us for not knowing this.
No, but well, getting thrown out stealing.
Because I really don't. My speculation was, is on base calculated based on plate appearances and not at bats?
Yes.
Yeah.
So sack flies and sack bunts are hurting your on base percentage?
I think that's right.
Oh, okay.
I think that's right. Yeah. Can't say with 100% certainty.
But we still have to guess who the player is.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't have any idea, so I'm just going to throw a name out there. I'll say Ian Kinsler.
It's Nick Castellanos. There's no way you guys are going to get that. But he did
hit
a home
run.
Team,
at least.
Yeah, it was good. He's got a 600 slugging percentage. No walks, 9 strikeouts, 2 homers, 333 batting average for Nick Castellanos. And a puzzling slash line.
No walks, which thanks, Nick. That's why I can't get excited about him. Chris and I were actually talking about Nick Castellanos the other day because who was the player he was comparing
Gregory Polanco.
To? Gregory Polanco. Yeah, he was like, why do we still talk about Gregory Polanco like he's this player with exciting potential and not Nick Castellanos, who used to be a top prospect himself? And I was saying, well, there's a couple reasons, at least I do. Polanco can take a walk and Castellanos can't.
Polanco has shown improvement.
Yeah. And Castellanos just never really had the numbers in the minors that made me think that really justified the prospect hype to me. And, you know, I know he was pretty good in the second half last year, off to a pretty good start, but. Zero walks is you need to have some serious power to overcome that low plate discipline.
And I do think there's a not a huge difference, but there's a difference between 1,200 career plate appearances and 900.
Yeah, but we're getting back to the Polanco comparison,
right?
Yeah,
Heath, I think you were right about the sacrifice fly thing. Just did a little online research. Well done.
Well, good. I should have said it authoritatively, but. We were already struggling with that one, and I didn't want to just say it wrong.
Hitting streaks. Two players have hits in all 9 games so far. I think it's 9 for both of them. Carlos Gonzalez and Manny Machado.
I think Gonzalez has got like an 18 or 19 game hitting streak now.
Wow. And he has the second highest exit velocity in baseball behind Preston Tucker.
What happened to Ryan Howard?
Maybe.
Well, this was 2 days ago. Howard was first, and he hit a home run yesterday.
Really?
Must have hit some softies. Before that,
he had a home run off a left-handed pitcher.
Yes, he did.
That should have led the whole show.
No thanks.
Too bad he's batting 200.
Brian Howard's third. Okay, we're okay.
Okay, so Carlos Gonzalez is batting 378 with 3 home runs after having a 964 OPS and 36 home runs in his final 104 games last year. He is, however, 3-for-11 with no extra base hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts against lefties. But still, pretty good start for Carlos Gonzalez. We don't have to say anything about Machado. But how about Cargo? What do you think?
Well,
I hope he doesn't get traded.
I don't think coming into this year there was very much concern about how is Cargo going to perform if he's on the Rockies and healthy.
Hmm.
If he's on the Rockies and healthy, he's going to be a top 10 outfielder. It's just the odds. Well,
maybe not top 10, but he's going to be high end.
I think he's going to be top 10 as long as he's, okay. but I can't rank him in the top 10 because I don't think he's going to be healthy.
Okay.
And I think he could get traded.
Sure.
Would you rather have Ryan Braun or Carlos Gonzalez?
I'd rather have Braun.
Yeah. I'm questioning that now, but I've got Braun ahead of him still.
Would you rather have Dexter Fowler or Carlos Gonzalez? Ha ha ha! Not the guy
funny.
In my league.
All right. I bet that guy wouldn't have made that trade.
Probably not. Now, I am trying to get Chris Sale and Jose Bautista in my FanDuel lineup. I don't think it's going to happen. We have some amazing starting pitchers going tonight. Kershaw, Sale, Bumgarner, Keuchel. I might go a little bit cheaper and use Carlos Martinez against the Reds, but these are fun decisions to make. And this is why I love FanDuel. You can choose from any player in baseball and put that player on your fantasy team. Just have to stay under the salary cap. It's a different way to play fantasy baseball. It's a great challenge, incredibly fun. Go to FanDuel.com right now and start playing. We got a special offer for new users. If you sign up today and enter your first league and you use our promo code HOMERUN, either win a cash prize in that league or FanDuel is going to automatically refund your entry fee up to $10 for additional play. So go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, sign up with our promo code. It's one word, no spaces. It's home run. Hit a home run. All right. Most added players in CBS Sports Leagues. Nomar Mazara is number one. He's 81% owned. And he's a nice little bargain on FanDuel, by the way. Jeremy Hazelbaker is number two. Brock Holt is number three. Angel Pagan, number four. He's 44% owned. And Colby Rasmus, number five, at 75% owned. We haven't talked much about Rasmus. Well, how about, you know, Mazara and Hazelbaker we've discussed a lot lately. But how about the next three? Holt, Pagan, Colby Rasmus. Scott, what's your take on those three?
I haven't been particularly motivated to pick up either.
Any.
There were three.
Okay, what were the three again? Sorry.
Holt, Pagan, and Rasmus.
Yeah, any of them. There you go. Rasmus, I think, is the one who could be most useful because he actually has a category he excels at with the power. But I don't really think he's turning over a new leaf here just because he's on a hot streak to begin the season. Very streaky throughout his career. He's faked me out. Used to fake me out every year back when he was first getting started, and he came with a lot of prospect hype. But he's just, he's going to be this off and on guy who finishes with 25 home runs. So if you want to play the hot hand, fine. Holt, a lot of his production is based on power, which we know he doesn't have. And Pagan, I could see him as a hot hand play also, but more in a points league because he excels with the strikeout to walk rate and he has some doubles power. When he's healthy, he usually is a pretty underrated option in that format, but he's not often healthy, and, roster sizes are so small in that format that there's usually not reason to really make a play for him.
Okay, Malik Smith is 22% owned. To all the people who picked up Malik Smith, he's been pretty bad. Would you drop Malik Smith?
What, 21%?
22%.
22%? That's... in El Roto League, I think he's basically must start because you need those steals.
Right, NL only, yeah.
The one way I would drop him is if I'd added him as a speculative add and I have Blackman and he just got hurt and I need an outfielder that's going to play, I'm probably not going to be playing Malik Smith.
Well, okay, how about this group of outfielders? Smith, Joey Rickard, Jorge Soler. The three of them are in the top eight in the most added list. Are these guys just sort of streaming options? If there's somebody better, you go ahead and drop either Smith, Rickard, or Jorge Soler. And Soler is 62% owned. He's in a slightly different category.
Well, I'd rather have Soler.
Yeah, but is Soler still like droppable if there's someone you really want to get over the weekend?
I think so. I'd drop him, unless it was a five outfielder league where I just, that fourth and fifth outfield spot were giving me fits and I need to fill them somehow. I'd drop him for any of these pitchers we talked about today. The standouts yesterday or today. I'm sorry, the standouts on Wednesday or Thursday, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be willing to drop him for those if I didn't need an outfielder. Because we don't know, the biggest issue with him is we don't know how much he's going to play. I like the upside a lot if he is an everyday player, but even before Baez is back, it's not so clear that he is.
Let's help people out for Fantasy Week 3 and take a look at some of the two-star pitchers. And we'll go through it. And, of course, who's ranking the two-star pitchers this week?
I am again.
Oh, okay, Scott.
Yep.
I've been adding them already, though. So
he's been ranked. He's probably has a head start on ranking them because he's actually made moves for them.
Number one's got to be Syndergaard, right, at Philadelphia and at Atlanta?
Yes, that sounds like a very likely scenario.
All right, good stuff. So I'll try to pick out some interesting ones here. Would you trust Michael Pineda against Oakland and Tampa Bay?
Yes.
I would. Yeah, two
absolutely.
Good matchups.
That's fantastic. But yes.
Okay, would you trust John Lackey at St. Louis and at Cincinnati?
Well, I mean, we're still at the threshold of pitcher here now where unless he has a start at Colorado, I'm going to start him every two-star week.
In a roto league or category?
Yeah, I mean, he's not exciting. But the main reason he's not exciting is because he doesn't have big strikeout potential. You make it two starts instead of one, it's going to be a good strikeout total.
Yep.
This one, you know, I cannot possibly see myself sitting him, but I will be kind of uneasy about Drew Smyly at Boston and at the Yankees.
That is concerning. I'm still going to start him. I'm much more worried about the Boston than I am the Yankees.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah, the Yankees have struggled against lefties.
Yeah.
You got to start him, though. All right, how about Jimmy Nelson, Minnesota and Philadelphia? Yeah, Minnesota and Philadelphia. I think you're going to start Jimmy Nelson.
Yeah, that's a good – well, he's only 62% owned, so that's a guy that you could pick up as a streaming option.
There's no way he's making two starts.
Jimmy Nelson?
He's starting tonight. So we have him listed as Wednesday and Sunday. I think that's going to change.
Well, that's not good.
Not if he plays there's no way you pitch Wednesday and then follow it up by Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's going to change. But other guys who are available, Tanner Roark at Miami and Minnesota. He's 63% owned. Jared Eichhoff, Mets and Brewers. Brewers on
Absolutely.
The road. You like them both?
No, not Roark.
No?
Roark would have to be a start him in the relief pitcher spot in a points league situation.
But Minnesota, he does get Minnesota one of those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Miami's not exactly a tough matchup. I just think there's... If you're looking to guard ratios, Roark's still highly questionable.
Okay. How about same with Jay Happ at Boston and Oakland at home?
I'd feel very much better about starting Jay Happ than I would Tanner Roark.
I guess, but...
Oakland against lefties.
I'm really disenchanted with Happ right now. Even though he has a 2.25 ERA, I don't like what a lot of the number... I don't like what a lot of the underlying numbers suggest,
which is
that he's reverted to what he was before teaming up with Ray Searidge.
Who was his first start with against?
Happ played the Rays were his first start.
Okay, so that was a good matchup. Then he faced Toronto in the Rogers Center.
Right, but you know,
he plays the Yankees.
In addition to the strikeout to walk rate, which you know, I don't mean to go too far down this path, but I didn't get a chance to talk about Happ yesterday. You know, obviously the strikeout and walk rates are looking like pre-Searidge, but also the pitch usage. Part of his success under Ray Searidge was figuring out fastball command and then relying on that fastball a lot more than he ever did. His fastball usage is now back to what it was pre-Pittsburgh, and he's relying a lot more on his secondary pitches like before. And it's not doing his peripherals any favors, and if he doesn't have good peripherals pitching half his games in the Rogers Center.
Right.
He's on a very, very short leash for me, J-Hap.
I'm going to say some other names. I hope you guys are looking at the matchups. Do you like Mike Leake, Ubaldo Jimenez, Clay Buchholz, Phil Hughes? How about those four? They're about 50 to 60% owned.
Is Alex Wood not on that list?
Alex Wood is 48% owned. He's at Colorado in one of his starts, so. Not sure you want to go with Alex Wood next week.
Heath picked him up.
Is his other one
Colorado
against,
scary?
His other one's against Atlanta.
It is against Atlanta. I think. I know it was a good start, but you know, good starts for Alex Wood in 2014 were 8, 9, 10 strikeouts. He got 3 strikeouts, and I'm scared of Alex Wood, especially. If not for that Colorado start,
right.
I'd like him as a streaming option.
I think
That's scary.
When I picked him up, I saw the Atlanta start and.
I jumped the gun.
I was on mobile. I may have seen something.
Plus, Adam Conley's owned in 1% more leagues than Alex Wood. How does that make sense?
He's not. He's owned in a much higher percentage of that in our leagues.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He's not available in any leagues I'm in.
But speaking to podcast listener land, Adam Conley's a much better choice.
I do like league a lot.
Two-start option or otherwise.
Well, look, there are actually a lot of solid two-star pitcher options that are about 50 to 60% owned. If you play in leagues where all those guys are owned, let's dig a little bit deeper. Shane Green is 32% owned, and then you've got Matt Cain, Robbie Ray, at San Francisco and Pittsburgh at home. Wade Miley at Cleveland and at the Angels. Jake Peavy, Chase Anderson. Chase Anderson at Minnesota and home against Philadelphia. You could do worse, I think, just looking at those matchups. He's 15% owned. I'm not saying standard mixed league or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like him very much, but he has yet to allow an earned run and has two really good matchups. So I could see that in a deeper points league especially.
Joe Kelly, Matt Whistler, Ruby De La Rosa, Matt Shoemaker, Kendall Graveman. Tough week for him at the Yankees and at the Blue Jays. It's tough to find deep gems, but I don't know. What about Robbie Ray? 13% owned at San Francisco, sure. Home against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think he's undervalued to begin with. He had a good start against the Dodgers, a lot of walks, but. I mean, just looking at a strikeout rate last year, I think there's some upside there, and I wouldn't mind picking him up for the two starts. Shane Green was probably the most exciting name you mentioned for me, though. Not only did he have a good spring and followed it up with a good debut, but, at Kansas City, not a great matchup, but the fact that it's a pitcher's park kind of, I think, works in his favor. And then Cleveland is a good matchup, so... Green, I think, if getting that extra start isn't all a priority for you, he's a priority add, which I think we were saying last year too, but then because of a rainout, he didn't end up getting two starts.
All right. Rest of the show will be mostly emails, but there was a lot more from yesterday, so let's try to get to that. For example, Wilson Ramos is 50% owned, and he's batting .407 with a home run. So who's excited about Wilson Ramos?
If I would say the Blake Swihart owners are. he had LASIK, right?
Yes. Yep.
So that's kind of a big deal. I made the joke because we did a video on him just earlier this week, and he had one of the least sustainable BABIPs in all of baseball last year because it's not like he's a fast guy. And he had, never mind.
You're thinking of somebody else?
He has a .476 BABIP this year. He's not going to, he's not going to hit 300.
No. Ramos is a career .260 hitter.
Yeah.
Socrates Brito is 20% owned. And, you know, he's the guy I dropped and then I regretted it and I picked him back up. And I just feel like he's going to get that job. You know, he's going to play more consistently than Chris Owings. I was
looking at his numbers last night because I feel like he hadn't done anything.
Right.
But he's slugging 500, 522 actually. Home run and a triple.
He hasn't done much. He's hit 304 with a home run and a steal and 23 at bats.
Yeah, if the Chris Owings thing was out of the picture, I think we'd be a lot more excited about him than we are. And I think eventually Chris Owings will be out of the picture because he's not very good.
Right. So Brito, I mean, look, he's 20% owned. If things go well, he could be a guy who's more like 50% owned at some point. So maybe try to beat the curve.
He's okay. Probably going to score more fantasy points this year than Byron Buxton.
Yeah. Four down. And we talked about some of these guys. Colton Wong. Are you ready to drop Colton Wong? 79% owned.
I believe I'm going to write about Colton Wong today, and I will answer that question after that. But I'm really concerned.
So who's like Jonathan Scope? I could see taking him over Wong, and I imagine there's a discrepancy there in the ownership percentage.
Yeah.
That's, you know, points league, I just can't get excited about somebody like Scope because he doesn't walk at all. But a lot of home runs for a middle infielder, and I think pretty valuable in Roto.
Some starting pitchers, you know, that might be over-owned. Nate Eovaldi is 72% owned. It's kind of weird. He's given up four home runs so far in two starts, and he has never been a home run guy. He gave up like 10 last year, and 0.6 home runs per nine in each of his last three seasons. So I guess that could go one of two ways. He gets that fixed and Eovaldi pitches better, or Eovaldi's just not that good, which is kind of where I'm leaning. And Chris Tillman is 70% owned, and he flopped last night at Texas.
Yeah. Well, that's just not the type of place that you start Chris Tillman at.
Yeah.
You start Chris Tillman when he faces the Rays. You start him when he's got a good matchup in a two-start week. You don't start him against Texas.
Would you drop Nate Eovaldi in a roto league or Tillman? Forget the Sparp thing for Drew Pomeranz, who pitched pretty well yesterday.
I would. I think there's a lot more upside there with Pomeranz. He certainly has shown some strikeout potential, which we always knew he had, 15 in 11 innings. Now, six walks in those 11 innings as well, and that's going to be part of the equation also. But the starts he has made, by and large, since leaving Colorado have been good enough that I wanted to see him stick in the rotation. And now that he has the third pitch, throwing a changeup about 12 to 15% of the time, I think he will stick in the rotation. So I don't think he's going to, you know, join the top 50 starting pitchers anytime soon, but he has a better chance of that than either Eovaldi or Tillman do.
I want to correct something I said. Robbie Ray is not 13% owned. He's 13% started. He is 28% owned, Robbie Ray. So, yeah. All right, that concludes yesterday discussion from yesterday's stuff. Quickly on DFS here, you can listen to the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. I have a lineup that I will share if anybody is interested. Here's who I would start in FanDuel tonight. And it's tough, Heath, because, man, we got some aces going. But I like Joe Ross. I'm going to start Joe Ross for 7,200 at Philadelphia.
Okay.
Wilson Ramos, Hanley Ramirez, Rougned Odor, Adrian Beltre, Xander Bogaerts, Jose Bautista, Mookie Betts, and Nomar Mazara. So the three stacks, I guess, I like are the Blue Jays against Porcello.
Right.
The Red Sox against R.A. Dickey. And the Rangers against Vance Worley.
Yeah, you had two players the same as I had in my original lineup. And they were Mazzara and Bautista.
Bautista's numbers against Porcello, he has an OPS over 1,300, and he hit two home runs off him last week. So try to get him in your lineup.
Yeah, that's good. the thing that's interesting for me at pitcher is there is a pitcher at every price range that I really want to play.
Was Ross,
I mean, Clayton
one of them?
Kershaw's pitching 12,800. You can't really go wrong there. I think the most popular pitcher tonight will probably be Zach Greinke, because he's 2,400 less than Kershaw and he's facing the Padres. And the Padres, when they don't play at Coors, I think have scored four or five runs in seven games. Carlos Martinez, definitely at 9,000. Garrett Richards, 8,700. I would definitely consider him against the Twins. And then you mentioned Joe Ross. I think that's a very good name down at $7,200.
Any cheap hitters you can think of off the top of your head? Other than Mazzara, who's 2,700 and probably will be in a lot of lineups.
We'll have to wait and see what the lineups look like. But I think Derek Dietrich is 2,200 at third base against Williams Perez. Dietrich's had some success against right-handed pitching in his career. Steven Vogt at catcher for 2,400 against Volquez. At some point, Vogt's going to be good again, we hope. And the one stack you did not mention, I have to think the Astros are a little bit frustrated after their recent series with the Royals. The Tigers are coming to town. They're starting Big Pelf tonight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Big Pelf.
The Astros may take out their frustrations on Big Pelf.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And listen to the podcast for more. Let's read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Brandon emails, a trade went down the other day in one of my 12-team mixed roto leagues. I'm a little bothered by it, considering last year these two teams also made fairly one-sided deals, with team number one always coming out on top.
Oh.
Team number one trades. I mean, this is ridiculous. I am, like, sick just reading this, but here we go. Team number one trades Jeremy Hazelbaker, Angel Pagan, and James Shields. Hazelbaker, Pagan, and Shields. Team number two trades Mookie Betts and Hector Rondon.
Yeah, that's not good. And I'm going to guess it's a situation where the owner of Team 2 giving up bets
is a moron.
Is Adam Azer?
Well, I'm not going to say he's a moron. I'm guessing he probably just hasn't played fantasy baseball for very long.
Well, he's played for at least the season. And this is a keeper league, and bets is worth $9 for two more years after this season. Oh, it's infuriating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the trouble in leagues where you have to change personnel, or leagues maybe that haven't existed very long, is just finding good owners and kind of everybody figuring it out together. And I don't know that this is one league. I have to assume this one guy at least hasn't played for very long, because I mean that's just textbook rookie move, trading for hot hands. You know, players who've done something recently, so they must be the good ones now, you know?
Yeah, let me backtrack on the moron comment. I feel bad. You're not a moron. I was doing that for dramatic effect to please the listeners. They like when I call people morons. No, I'm just kidding. That was I think
I think the best approach to take with this situation is you know, not veto all his trades or anything, because he just kind of has to learn the hard way. But if this guy's going to take advantage of him this way, you need to start taking advantage of him this way too. And if for some reason he's not making trades with you that it seems like he's making with the other guy, then maybe there is something fishy going on, and that needs to be investigated.
Jimmy writes, it would be interesting to do a fab budget waiver segment on Fridays. It would be really helpful to do it then, because most of the fab budget waivers run on Sunday night. You guys could discuss any relevant free agent worth betting that you think may be available that week. So what percent of your fab budget would you guys use on Jeremy Hazelbaker?
I mean, it depends a lot on the type of league and my roster construction, but 8%?
I'd go $0 bid on Hazelbaker. I'd want to save my money for the players I really thought were game changers.
Scott's not going to get Hazelbaker.
Probably not.
Adam Conley, what percent on Adam Conley?
Higher.
10.
Yeah, I could see that.
What percent on, man, who else?
Maybe 6. $100 budget, you got to make that last all season. I don't know. I think the exciting pickups are in the 6 to 10 range. And if you don't get them, you'll probably get at least one of them. But if you don't get any of them, well, you'll get them next time.
Okay, last one. What percent for Genmar Gomez?
Yeah,
I'd still give him 3 or 4.
Only if I like actually needed saves, because I don't expect him to last in that role.
I feel like you have to bid more on weekly fab. You know, it's not the same as like four guys saw the box score last night and know to pick this guy up. It's the whole league has one chance to get this one guy.
Right.
If you really want someone, you have to go for it.
But like, I mean, knowing you're going to have to be bidding on guys all season long, that's why I feel like you need to be a little more cautious in your bidding. I get what you're saying. You're not going to get many players for $0 bids like you would in daily fab, but you're going to need to be picking up players all year. So that's why you kind of have to take a more gradual approach to it than, you know, throwing $20 at this guy because I really like him, or $20 at this guy because I really like him. You're going to run out of money pretty quickly that way.
Sam wants to know who we like better, Marcelo Zuna or Jeremy Hazelbaker.
Yeah, you know, if it's a league where there's, I'm pretty much stuck with him all year, Ozuna. But I'm not high enough on Ozuna to pass up the hot hand play in a shallower league.
It's a 16 team roto league.
That's not shallow.
No.
Probably going Ozuna.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would bet on Ozuna to be better at the end of the year. But he just lost Blackman. I would bet on Hazelbaker to be better over the next month.
Chris, in a small town you've never heard of in New York, has Albert Pujols at first and Scooter Gennett at second. Who would you rather stash, A.J. Reed or Trey Turner?
By the way, I'm sure Al's heard of this town, whatever it is.
Maybe, probably.
Probably Turner. I think the impact would be pretty close between the two. Obviously, Turner more speed and Reed more power. All positions being equal, I think I would be more likely to stash Reed, but
yes,
Jeanette is pretty close to garbage in my mind.
Last email, guys. Last email.
Yep.
From Jin. I own Jaime Garcia, Jared Eichhoff, Vince Velasquez, and Adam Conley. I have to drop one of them for Jung Ho Kang. Can you rank those four pitchers, or should I drop Drew Smyly and keep all four of them? Jaime Garcia, Jared Eichhoff, Vince Velasquez, Adam Conley, and Drew Smyly.
Well, I'll rank the five since Smiley's part of this discussion. Velasquez, Smyly, Garcia, Eichhoff, Conley. But, you know, he mentions it in here. He has to make room for Gong within 2 weeks because that's presumably Gong's timetable. It's very likely one of these will give you a reason to drop him within the 2 weeks. Just
one
will distinguish himself in a bad way.
I would rank them exactly the same. You know, this has been a very amicable show.
It has. And
well, it's your birthday, and I don't want to give you a hard time on your birthday.
Well, I think it's good because I was going to make the point. We get occasionally a few emails about Scott and I disagreeing all the time.
Yes, I'm so glad you're going to read this email.
Well, okay, I'll read. We had subjects of Heath is a bully and are Scott and Heath married in the last 24 hours. Yeah, it seems like Scott and Heath are married because whenever Scott is high on a player, Heath immediately dislikes the player. i.e. Trevor Story, Rich Hill, Clayton Kershaw. I don't dislike Clayton Kershaw. Come on. Why can't Heath agree with any of the great points that Scott makes on a daily basis?
Wow. So I think this guy's married to me.
This email might be. Well, I think his perception of marriage might be different than ours. It's starting to get hard to listen to as Heath disagrees with everything Scott says. I did not intentionally agree with Scott more today, but the point I wanted to make is Scott and I probably agree on far more things than we disagree on. I'm much close. His rankings and my rankings are much closer than most anyone else in the industry would be to his rankings or my rankings. But I don't know that it really makes a lot of sense for me to expand greatly on the points that I agree with that Scott makes.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that the whole I talk a lot more when I disagree with Scott because I'm trying to offer a different viewpoint.
That's a fair point. And since you guys are married, I hope you have nice plans for tonight for Heath's birthday, and we have to go. So, Heath, have a great, great birthday and a great weekend. Scott, same with you. Not birthday, but weekend. And I'm Adam Azer. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Bye.
Bye.